Hi, my name is Steve.
Hi, my name is Trisha. And yeah, you might know me on the internet from tech and video game type things. I have made a lot of web content over the past decade or so, but never here. I'm so excited to be here with you, Steve.
Aw, thank you so much for saying that. Your check is in the mail. I'll make sure that that doesn't bounce this time. Sorry about last time, by the way.
Yeah.
It's so great to have you here. You know, you and I have been friends forever. We just did an episode of your podcast, but that was like the first time we ever actually got to speak outside of seeing each other's videos.
I know. It's so fun to finally connect with you on a more personal level, right? Like, I feel like a lot of us that kind of wade around in the same video game industry pool, we all follow each other's content. We all get to see what each other are putting out and have these conversations online, you know, mostly via Twitter and typing and that kind of stuff. But to actually be face-to-face, even in a virtual format, and have a conversation is a real treat.
I know. It's nice to be able to talk to the people that you follow forever. And in this industry, boy, you said it. We all do have a lot of the same followers. And then we just like, have you ever actually talked to them? No, actually, I've been following them for 19 years and never said hello.
Yeah, it's so funny. When I run into people like yourself at conventions, I always trip myself up because I don't know whether to introduce myself because I can't remember if we've met in person or I just follow all your content so I feel like right. I know you. And it's the funniest thing. So I've defaulted to nice to see you because nice to see you could be either we've met before or I just follow all your content online, so I think I know you.
I like this. We're not even into the questions yet. You're already dropping gems of wisdom. Perfect. So for those of you out there who are super feeling awkward when you meet somebody and you're like, did I ever talk to them before? Now you know how to handle that situation.
Yep, there it is. Nice to see you instead of nice to meet you.
It happens like every convention too. The worst too is when you call someone their Twitter handle and it's not like you and me where we use our names. It's like, hey, what's up, JokerFace99? That's not your name. Damn it.
Yeah. I'm guilty of that as well. I have definitely done that. When it's viewers, you know your viewers by their handles, so that's a little less awkward than when it's like other people in the industry that are journalists and whatnot, but you really just know them by their handle. But I've had people do that to me before, honestly, and I never take offense to it when people are like, oh yeah, Trish Hershberger, I don't think I know you. And then we're talking for a while and they're like, wait a second, that girl Trish. I know you. I follow you. And I'm like, there it is. There it is.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Before we get too in, because you and I are just going to talk like friends forever here, and I'm supposed to be a professional interviewing you. Okay. So let's pretend like I'm a professional here, and let's start from the beginning. So talk a little bit about where are you from?
I am originally from a rural town in Pennsylvania, about an hour outside of Philadelphia. I grew up in a really, really, it was a very, very tiny town, so I didn't really expand my horizons and get to meet people that were a little different than me until it's kind of twofold. The dawn of dial-up internet was the first time I was like, ah, other people. And then also when I went to college. But yeah, I mean, where I was from, there weren't a lot of people that were into and passionate about the same things I was, especially, you know, I'm a little on the older side, Steve. So I was a child of the late 80s, early 90s. And back in those times, I didn't have a lot of friends growing up that enjoyed video games to the extent that I did or that were into modding PCs like I was. Mm. I'll be honest, as a young child, I was into modifying and upgrading PCs as a result of gaming. Because my parents, after they saw how I reacted with the Nintendo Entertainment Console, were like, yeah, no, never again. Not for this girl. Nope, she's done. So I had to port over to PC gaming. But then, of course, you need to make sure your PC can run the latest games, right?
Yeah, of course.
So then I had to learn how to upgrade my PC from a very young age. But yeah, there weren't a lot of other people in my small town that were into the same things as me. So it was really nice when I got to expand my horizons and find my people, if you will. Absolutely. That was really good for me.
You know, it's wild. Something I don't think we've touched on in this show yet, but is something I've heard repeatedly, is a lot of the people who I've ended up interviewing, particularly on this show, are the people that hundreds of thousands of people follow on Twitter and Instagram and social media. So they have lots of friends / fans, depending on how you look at it. But a lot of us started out feeling like we were very isolated. Why do you think that people who grew up in sort of that, man, nobody's like me, have now found their calling in this game sphere of ours?
to me, at least, I attribute it to the internet and kind of casting that net over the World Wide Web to find other people like yourself and, you know, like myself. So where I was from, it was a very, very small town, like I said. So it was like, if the 20 children in my class, if I didn't find anyone to connect with in the 20 children in my class, then there weren't really anyone I could connect with. It was just kind of like you were stuck with that. And so for me, internet became like a common household thing when I was in high school. And so then I was able to finally find chat rooms and forums of other people that were into the same games I was into or into the same hobbies I was into. And in high school, I really got into tabletop RPGs and Magic the Gathering and Wizards of the Coast eventually. But finding other people that were into those same things was a game changer for me. And then really kind of bridging the gap between digital friends to away from keyboard friends, as I like to say, your AFK friends, was when I got to college. And then rather than 20 kids a class, I still went to a pretty small college, but there were about 400 students in my class. And then I was able to like find the other musical theater nerds and find a D&D group. And that's when I really feel like I came into my own and kind of broke out of that shell of, nah, I'm just a loner. I kind of do my own thing. I'm just going to keep my head down and do my homework and, you know, whatever. To, oh my goodness, going out and talking to other people is really fun. You know, and then that kind of ported into later in life when I was able to marry my passions and what I did for a living into one cohesive career, then it was really cool to just kind of expand that friend group a little wider, if you will. And so now I have a lot of both AFK and digital friends, and I'm always so grateful.
How do you draw the line between AFK and real quote-unquote friends? Do you think they're the same thing? Are they different? Where do you fall on that?
To me, it completely has to do with how often I interact with those people.
Okay.
So if it's someone that I've never met in person, but we interact almost daily or at least a few times a week, I know that person pretty well. And when I say we interact, I don't just mean like I put out content and they watch my pre-recorded content. I mean like on a live streaming platform where we're having a back and forth, we're having a conversation in like one-on-one hangouts or group hangouts via Discord or something like that, but where you're conversing with someone on an ongoing basis, right? So to me, that's the same thing as having a pen pal, or you can think about long distance relationships, like ways that people have friendships that they might not actually physically be together in person, but you're still, there's a give and take and you're getting to know that person versus people who maybe I recognize the screen name, but I really don't know much about them at all. To me, that person feels more like an AFK acquaintance.
Yeah.
If you will, versus people who drop into your chat that it might be the first time that you see them and then hello, new person. But, you know, so I don't go the full route of saying everyone that I have seen online is a friend, because I do think that friendship is something that grows over time as you get to know each other and spend more time together. But I do certainly consider people that I have not met away from the keyboard my friends.
That makes sense. How do you consider friendship in the human lifetime? Do you consider it more like a mountain where you're kind of climbing up and you can fall down? Do you consider it more like a marathon? I've heard a lot of people use a lot of different metaphors for, you know, friendship in this life. What do you think it's like?
Oh, I guess I've never thought of it as a marathon or a mountain. For me, it's camaraderie and it's having a partner or multiple partners and companions with you, like on a great co-op adventure, if you will. And if someone is moving in a different direction than the direction you're moving, then that's okay. They may have served for that companionship at the time that you were moving the same direction, and then you go the same direction and you wish them well, but you may grow apart as friends. So I don't see it as like something that needs to be won or something that needs to be conquered. I see it as kind of a very peaceful, lovely thing that can exist for a short time, or it can exist for a lifetime, depending on the purpose that that person plays in your life.
For the season or for the reason, right?
Right.
It's perfect. I like the video game analogy there. How have you dealt with that in the past when somebody, you know, eventually decides that their quests, if you will, take them elsewhere?
I think for all of us, it's sad. And it, you know, it depends. Just like romantic relationship breakups, there can be friendship breakups. And sometimes they're gradual and sometimes they're sudden. But I think either way, there's kind of a loss for that companionship that was.
Mm-hmm.
But I do still think you can kind of look back on the time that was had and appreciate the good times that were had. Again, similar to a romantic relationship, you can look back on that. But there might be hurt feelings for a while. And that's the thing that happens. I've had friends that I've grown apart from that were just kind of a gradual process. And there were kind of no hurt feelings in the process. And I've had friendships where they kind of came to a little bit more of a tumultuous head. And then kind of, fortunately for me, the relationships that really kind of ended in a little bit more of a conflicted way. I've only had two of those in my life. And one of them, we were able to reconnect years later. And now we're in very different places in our lives. But it was still nice to have a little bit of closure and just have that, like, you know, I understand that we're not really close anymore, but I just want you to know that I wish you well. Had that moment, which can be really nice and gratifying. So even if someone is, you know, listening to this or watching this and having a hard time with a friend, know that, you know, it might be different in the future. You just never know.
Yeah. You know, toxic friendships are hard because, you know, you need to cut them out of your life. And sometimes it's not necessarily that somebody's toxic, but maybe they just don't fit with who you are now versus who you were when you became friends, because we all change, right? And we don't all change the same ways. You know, when you're looking back at your life and you're thinking about those stories, have there been any life lessons you've kind of learned out of that? Like, man, this is definitely the way I should have handled that relationship.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. There have definitely been moments where I kind of, once the light bulb has kind of gone off and the blinders have been removed, I think there are times when in any relationship, you can then kind of look back on things with a more objective viewpoint and wish you had handled things a little bit differently. But I think, like all of us, sometimes you make excuses for relationships in your life that maybe don't treat you the way you want to be treated, or don't respect you the way you want to be respected. And maybe you do grow in different directions. And like you said, Stephen, very well said, that, you know, when you initially became friends, you were more at a similar point, but you've just grown apart. And it's not necessarily anybody's fault. You're very different people. And it might not necessarily mean that you should be attached at the hip anymore or that kind of thing. So I think it's always good to try to be self-aware of the position that you're coming into thing from, so that you can then best be honest, not only with yourself, but with the other person too.
Absolutely. How does Atricia stay self-aware?
Oh, man. I try to do as much reflection as possible and just kind of always question whatever my initial thoughts are for myself. I'll always try to take a step back and just question, you know, did I really think that through? Did I do that for the reason that I thought I did? And sometimes I'll even be overcritical and think, oh, did that come off differently than I wanted it to? And sometimes things do come off differently than you want them to. Steve, you know, yeah. As someone who is a prevalent face and voice on the internet, there are some times that you're really meaning something to come across one way, and then the way that they end up is not at all what you intended. And sometimes you find yourself in a situation where you're like, oh, you know, do I step back and do some damage control? Like, a great example of that for me was when I was working as talent with the channel SourceFed, and we had won a Streamy Award, and I was one of the first of our cast to get up to the award to kind of say thank you at the podium to accept our award. And we won for Best News Show, and we were up against other news shows that were like much more hard-hitting news. Mm-hmm. And the channel that I was a part of was more infotainment, if you will. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like a bunch of comedic personalities giving you the news, but really just trying to be silly and make something that's entertaining. Uh-huh. And so what I ended up saying when I got to the microphone was, thank you so much for thinking we're a news show.
Oh, no.
And I think the way that it came out seemed a little insensitive,
yeah,
or like it was downplaying the other people in the category. That's not at all what I had intended. What I was intended was just saying, you know, we're just kind of goof-offs, and somehow we were lucky enough to win this, so thank you. What an intense compliment, right? So that's how I meant that to come off, and then I feel like it probably didn't come off that way, and of course I was so nervous, as you would be, and so I made a vlog about it either that evening or the next day. I actually think it was that evening, because I think I was still in my gown from the award ceremony, saying like, how I wish that would have sounded was this. So please don't think I was trying to insult the judges or anything like that with my comment. I just, I meant thank you so much for taking us so seriously. This is a huge honor because we often don't take ourselves very seriously. That's what I meant to say. But, you know, I think that happens to a lot of us.
Oh, yeah. You always have the 3 a.m. things you think about. Although, I'll have you know, I have never said anything that's been misconstrued by the internet at all.
Ever.
Definitely not. But no, I understand what you're talking about. The, you know, when you're underneath those lights and you're celebrating, especially if you make a faux pas and you're like, whoops, didn't mean to say that. You know, I would love to hear your take on that moment. That if you bring up a great point about being on a stage, winning an award. You know, a lot of people out there, especially listening to this, you know, this is a podcast all about people who are somewhere very high up in the industry, teaching the people who want to get there how to get there. And that's one of the great things I think you can talk about is, you know, what's it like once you finally hit that place where you're on the stage? You know, do you drop the aircraft carrier banner and be like, I did it, and then you sail off into the sunset? Or you know, what happens next?
I mean, I think that's probably a different choice for every person. But at least for most people I know, there is no, yes, I've done it, and now I can stop.
Yeah.
It's this ever-changing, almost racetrack, right? And so there's constantly new terrain for you to explore. There's constantly new twists and turns and challenges. And so I don't know that I personally could ever reach a point where I was like, yep, that's it. I'm done. Now I can just go and, I don't know, be a math teacher or something. Yeah. And I say math teacher because I think if I did not do what I did for a living, maybe it would be fun to be like the algebra teacher at a local high school and wear like the overalls with the square root symbol all over them and just kind of be like the wacky algebra teacher. I think that could be really fun. But, you know, I don't know that I would get to a point because I love what I do so much where I could just hang up my hat and do that. And I think for most people for that journey, when you do have some kind of accomplishment, like winning an award or something of that nature, it only fuels you to try to do more things and in different ways. Steve, you and I are friends with Lana Pierce. And Lana Pierce is a great example of someone
who, at a
very early age, accomplished so many things that so many people would normally think of as like the end goal, right?
Yep.
But she just keeps going and finding new ways to challenge herself and new things to take on. And it's just such a lovely success for so many people to thrive, to emulate.
It was a nightmare trying to keep up with her. No, you know, she is relatively young. She's like 70 mm-hmm. years old now, I think. And so relatively young. And and you know, I think there is something to achieving things very young and always having the goalpost be moving to the next thing. I think in our industry, it's something that we all deal with in one way or another, particularly people like you and I. We have friends who are way more popular than us and friends who may be lesser known. And I think it's a little strange sometimes being in that middle area. You know, how do you navigate the waters of being in between?
You know, I try not to think about what someone's numbers are, or, you know, following size or something like that. I mean, really, it's just we are all everyday ordinary people that just happen to have really extraordinary jobs.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, to me, it's if I find someone that has similar interests to me, that has similar career goals to me, instantly for me, I feel a companionship with that person.
Yeah.
And that just kind of makes it a little bit easier. Now, as far as there are definitely people in the industry that are so accomplished or work in areas of the industry that I would someday dream of working in, that don't get me wrong, I will fangirl. I think the first time I ever met Jessica Chobot, I fangirled so hard. I was interviewing her and I could barely get the words out. And just to say, like, you're such an inspiration. Hey, I love you so much. You know, and like, thank you for being a mom that still covers video games. And, you know, this was years and years ago. And now she and I are friends. The wonderful thing that the video games community does is bring people together. And, you know, I think it's a little different in a traditional office situation. You know your colleagues because you all work in the same office. And for us, in this industry, our office is really kind of the greater Twitter, YouTube, Twitch sphere. So our office is online.
Yeah.
So we just interact with each other in different ways, but I do still feel that there's that companionship there.
There has to be that level of companionship. Otherwise, right? We would be totally isolated in talking to our cameras all day.
And it feels that way sometimes. It can definitely feel very lonely, especially when you're faced with a challenge that I think is a creator-specific challenge. And there are some really creator-specific challenges that people come up against. And if you don't reach out to your other friends that are creators or that work in this industry in the same way you do, it can feel very lonely and very isolating. So if anyone's listening to this that's just starting out, make friends who are also trying to do what you're doing, because you will need that group support. So whether it's because you're combating people who are just trying to be nasty and ruin someone else's day online, or you're trying to figure out how to deal with family privacy concerns, or any myriad of laundry list of things that I think are pretty unique to some of the new digital content creation jobs that have come on the scene, having that support group is invaluable.
Having also peers that are your level, I can't tell you the amount of times that I have ran up against people who are lesser known, and they're like, oh man, you know Markiplier. Oh man, you were in a video with Ryan Reynolds. Why aren't you hanging out with them every day? It's like, well, because they're very nice and they're very busy. Sure. And so, you know, they got some things to do. And I think it's interesting because people, I don't know about you, but I found this to be very true. The friends that I made when I started in this industry 15 years ago are now the heads of companies or the vice presidents of companies. And it's like, you know, the reason that I'm friends with them is because when I was young, I didn't be like, oh, you had 3 followers, whatever, loser, and get out of here, you know. And, it's something I try to caution people against all the time. Do you have sort of words of warning that you try to give people as well?
I mean, that's a really good one. Mine would be similar. Mine is respect everyone you come across. In any situation you're in, if you are on set and you meet someone that they are a PA and it's their first day on set, and, you know, maybe that day on set, what they're doing is getting coffee for the camera ops or something like that. Do not treat them lesser than just because that's the stage where they are at that point in life. You may be on a shoot a year from then and they could be your DP.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like it's so rewarding to watch people's careers grow, especially when they're people that you get to say like, oh, I knew them when they were at this stage in the career. And like you said, now they're like running an entire company. Uh-huh. It is awesome. And seeing those success stories play out in real life to me is inspiring. Absolutely. So the more people like that you can surround yourself with, I think the better.
That's right. You are a reflection of the people you choose to hang out with. And I know for me personally, that's a huge red flag. If I'm hanging out with someone and they treat somebody who can do nothing for them very badly, then I want nothing to do with them anymore. What are some of the red flags for you? What when you're in a new friendship, what's something that you could see that you go, okay, maybe not?
A big one for me is particularly when you're working with someone else on camera, someone that doesn't play ball, as I like to say. So, you know, when you're on camera with someone, you have this imaginary ball that you toss back and forth. And really, your goal is to make the most fun piece of content with this other person. And sometimes you're on camera with people and you right away get a vibe that their goal is to make everyone else on camera look bad so that they look better. It's sometimes referred to as sandbagging, sandbagging your co-hosts. And those are the type of people that right away I realize, you know, if this person is friendly with me off camera, but they're doing this on camera, this is not a real friend. Mm-hmm. So I know that, and I know to keep that person a little bit more at arm's length. And always, you know, be kind and courteous and respectful to everybody, but maybe don't let them into your innermost circle, if you will.
Right.
They can be acquaintance level, but not super close. So that's a big red flag for me. And really, you know, like you said, and just how they treat other people. I worked in this table service industry for years. So anyone who's ever mean to someone in the service industry, whether it's a bartender, a waiter, that's a huge red flag for me. If you can't be nice to the people who are there, literally helping you, then I have very little time and patience for those people as well.
As you should. Yeah, I 100% feel that. What about off camera? What about just in real quote unquote life? Like what are some of the things that you kind of try to stay away from?
I've been very, very fortunate to have some really lovely people come into my life recently. But really, it's just, you know, it's how you treat other people, whether it's other people in the service industry, other people around you. If I observe someone treating people in a way that I don't necessarily agree with, even if they don't treat me that way, to me, that says you could eventually treat me that way because you seem to be okay with treating other people that way. And I can't get down with that. I feel like we all get a little bit more curmudgeon-y as we get older, right? And when we're young, it's very easy to make excuses for that type of behavior in other people because, you know, you want to love someone for their flaws. And as you get older, you kind of seen too much, right? So you're like, I know what path that leads down. No, thank you. I'm good. I'm so, so good with that. But yeah, I mean, for the most part, I have been very, very lucky to be surrounded with positive, wonderful people in my life. I guess the other thing that I usually see as like a friendship turnoff is when people ghost other people or no show on people. I feel like that's not respectful of other people's time. And I tend to keep friends around me like yourself, Steve, who are very busy people. We've got a lot of stuff to do. Yeah. And if you can't respect that person's time or they can't respect your time, that's not super cool. So that tends to also be another, like, I'll just take a couple steps back here moment for me.
Tend to look at the bigger picture. Yeah, I can definitely get down with that. For me, it's always been, if someone continually flakes out on plans and they always have an excuse, you know, one of my favorite things to fall back on in life is when people talk about time. I was actually just talking about that with Jeremy Dooley last week. Well, if you are saying to yourself, I wish I had more time, I just don't have time for that person, it's an excuse. We all have the same amount of time. It's prioritization. So you're just not prioritizing that person. So it's not that you don't have time for them. It's that they're not a higher priority than watching your 12th episode of The Golden Girls, as great as The Golden Girls are. Maybe you should answer your friend's text.
That is so true. It is so true. And I think a lot of friendships have really been tested over the past year and some change that a lot of us have been isolated because it now requires quite a bit of effort. You know, people are starting to go out and about again for the most part. But in the times when we really weren't, we were all kind of sequestered at home. It does take effort to set up a Zoom game night or, you know, however you're going to get in touch with that person. It's not as simple as seeing them around the office or you see each other at parties because you have mutual friends or something like that. You need to make an effort if you want to maintain that contact with that person. So I couldn't agree with you more about prioritizing people that are important to you.
How do you manage to match that same energy in, energy out with your friendships and with really all your relationships in your life, whether it's, you know, parental or whether it's significant other? How does one navigate those waters of making sure that you're putting in the same energy you're getting out?
Oh, it is the greatest juggling act to try to make sure that you can give the right amount of energy to everybody. And yeah, I mean, for me, it's a lot of juggling balls in the air, if you will, because I want to make sure that I give enough of myself to my husband, to my son. My son's 4 and a half. So he needs me around, to my career and to my friends and my family, who my family does not live nearby. They're on the opposite side of the country. So I have to make an effort to remember to call or video chat with them. And staying in touch with everybody can be pretty tricky. But like you were saying earlier, you know, if someone's really not prioritizing you or having an excuse over and over and over, what I will do eventually is just say then, I'll be very honest and just say, hey, I've noticed the past couple times that we were supposed to connect, you weren't available. No big deal. I just want you to know I'm going to stop reaching out and the ball's in your court now. So if you want to connect at some point, you just hit me up. You know where to find me. And it's not like a mad thing. It's just I'm not going to keep expending my energy if there's not any energy being returned here. So just a heads up. The ball's in your court, and I'll see you when I see you.
Wow. Sounds like you are really good at setting boundaries.
Yeah, you know, you have to be after a while. And I think for me, I got a lot better at setting boundaries when it came to my family and when it became to becoming a parent, because becoming a parent is a 24/7 job. You do not have days off. And especially, I mean, my parents don't live in the area. My in-laws don't live in the area. So it's not like we can just drop them at grandma's and then go hang out with our friends or something like that. Like it takes a lot of effort to be able to get together with people, finding a babysitter we feel comfortable with, that kind of thing, which honestly, we haven't done really sitters at all through the pandemic because we don't want to invite a stranger we don't really know or trust into our house given that situation. But yeah, I mean, you really have to work to prioritize people when you have a 24/7 tiny human job in addition to your career job. So that's made me have to put boundaries in place a little more than I think I did before.
I've gotten really good at setting boundaries with making sure that I have two slices of pizza. That's about my only boundaries. I'm not necessarily better at the other
ones. Wait. Yeah. At least two slices of pizza, or no more than two slices?
Does it look like I got this body with no energy? No, I put in a lot of energy into that relationship with that pizza. We are on good terms.
Pizza! Yes, yeah, pizza for the win. I get that.
So how does Atricia set boundaries? How do you learn how to set boundaries? That's something I've heard again and again from people is, I don't know how to set boundaries. How do you do it?
Trial and error.
Light something on fire.
I wish I had a better answer than that. And I'm better at setting boundaries in certain areas of my life than I am in other areas of my life. But I think for me, I would have said previously, I am someone who's not great at setting boundaries. But like I said, kind of having a tiny person who relies on you all the time makes you have to set boundaries, uh-huh. right? Because you end up having to reprioritize. And when there is a tiny life depending on you 24/7, that is your A number one priority. Yeah. And everything else has to get moved below that. So everything else, if I have to set a boundary with something else in order to take care of priority A number one, then that's what I have to do. And I think before that, the people pleaser in me and the perfectionist and the overachiever in me would have said, oh no, but I just have to do this one more thing. I'm going to do this one more thing. And then I'm going to take care of this person. Then I'm going to call this person back. Mm-hmm. I legit can't do that anymore. So out of necessity, I have become better at setting boundaries. But I also, like many people that you mentioned, have struggled with it.
Yeah, I mean, you have to set your priorities. You have to learn how to do conflict resolution. That's something that I personally have struggled with. If a friend is mad or if I'm mad at a friend, I know it is difficult for me to confront that friend. It sounds like maybe you have gotten a little bit of a handle on how to do that.
Thanks to therapy.
Yay, therapy.
Shout out. Take care of your mental health,
yes,
everybody.
Please do.
But yeah, a lot of the therapy that I've been fortunate enough to have over the years has been in conflict resolution when it comes to friends, because I think like a lot of people, I tend to be very non-confrontational. I want to be the nice person all the time. I want everybody to like me. So approaching a conversation with, oh, this is going to be really bad and I'm going to have to confront somebody about this thing. That's terrifying, right? That's terrifying for a lot of us.
Yeah.
And so through counseling, I was able to kind of find some communication tools that enabled me to, not in a hostile way, not in a rude or aggressive way, still be able to relay to the other person, hey, this is what's going on with me. These are my wants and needs. I'm not going to tell you what to do about it. I want to be honest with you about where I am, which is still a very difficult conversation to have. But then at least I feel like I've gone in the most diplomatic way that I can. And, you know, the rest is out of my control. And I'm someone who has a really hard time dealing with things that are out of my control. But at some point, you just have to say there is nothing more that I can do here. And then if you really need to feel like you're in control, go play The Sims or something like that to get that fix.
I usually light my sins on fire. So it's, you know, I don't know. Listen, they like to play with electronics and I don't know what to do about it.
You're cooking without upgrading your cooking skill.
Oh,
I get it.
I knew that was my problem. No, I get it. You know, especially when things are out of control. There was a time I had with a friend a couple of years ago where I had a tweet go viral and it was just bonkers how many likes it was getting and it was lagging my computer. And the previous week I had tried to speak to this friend and they were like, you know, hey, you don't share things with us. We often hear about like your life on Twitter and like it'd be great if you shared with us first. And I'm like, okay, cool, I'll try to do that better. And so I shared that with them and they got super mad at me because they were like, wow, must be nice to have a viral tweet, you're just bragging about it. And instead of like being like, hey, you asked me to share, I'm trying to share with you, I was like, oh well, F you then. And then I just didn't talk to them for a week. And you know, it's weird how as you get older people think that, you know, this wisdom just appears in your brain and it doesn't. Sometimes we don't know how to deal with a friend when they're mad at you.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, there's a lot of times you don't know how to deal with things, but through trial and error and overcoming obstacles in life, I think you find different tools and techniques that work for you when it comes to conflict resolution. And so that's why, you know, when you get a chance to talk to someone that's like 25 years your senior, do it, because they have probably picked up a lot of extra tools that you would have to go through another 25 years of experience to pick up. So it's really nice to be able to learn from them. Now, that being said, everybody's lives are so different that they may have picked up completely different tools than you will ever need. But, you know, it's always good to learn.
It is. And I don't want to spend the entire time talking about conflict, because that's not what this entire show is about. But it's also about happiness. And, you know, that's something I'd love to ask you. Do you believe that true happiness is achievable?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I definitely believe that true happiness is achievable. But I am also someone that grew up, and it's going to sound silly, but I'm also someone that kind of grew up in a smaller town where happiness is the state of mind you can have when you are content with things. Mm-hmm. That's what happiness is. So finding the joy in the simple things in life around you was a bit more commonplace, I would say, in the way that I grew up. So for me, I feel like I find happiness every day. And of course, there are certain things that I always think like, well, this is okay, but it can be better. And that's all right, too, because it gives you something to work towards. But I am definitely a glass is half full kind of person. And I understand that I have people in my life that are, you know, whatever they're looking at, the glass is always half empty and it's never good enough. And, you know, they're constantly going to need to achieve this and this and this and this to be happy. And to those people, I hope that they can find a really great therapist or counselor that they click with to kind of help them reframe some of those thoughts. And that benefits everyone. Like right now, you know, I'm working on reframing some of my ideas about accomplishments and productivity, because I am someone who finishes a 10-hour day and then thinks, oh, but I didn't do this and I didn't do this. And what a failure I am from today. Aww. You know, I only accomplished these 12 things, but I didn't get to these two. And I'm just going to sit here and feel bad about it for the rest of the night. So I am trying, I'm working actively to kind of reframe those thoughts. So I think we all have ways that we can do ourselves a favor and increase our own happiness levels a little bit by working on those things. But I would say overall, I'm definitely an incredibly happy person. I'm very, very lucky to have a healthy family that I love, that loves me. And even my family members that live far away, I'm, you know, in contact with them, and I'm surrounded by a nice, close support group. So even when things career wise or on the internet tend to get me down, I do have that support group to fall back on, which is lovely.
Being content, not always the easiest thing in life. But what about perfectionism? Do you think there is such a thing as a perfect life?
There is not such a thing as a perfect life. That's why all of us who are perfectionists are constantly struggling, because we're trying to attain the unattainable. Mm. Steve, would you consider yourself a perfectionist?
Very close to one, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's always a new bar, and the bar can be set a little bit higher, right? And a little bit higher and a little bit higher. But again, one of the things I'm working on right now is really trying to come to terms with, once you've set the bar so high that it's unattainable, or for me, the problem is when it's unsustainable. Mm. So I can attain it sometimes, but not 5 to 7 days a week, or I will burn out.
Right.
So finding the sustainable balance where I can really work in a happy and healthy way at this level. And of course, there are some days you're going to need to ramp it up, just because we all have those days. And there might be some days that you want to just take it a little easier.
Absolutely.
And that's okay too. But, you know, finding that for people who struggle with a perfectionist nature, which I most definitely do, I think that that can be really rewarding. And, I don't know that it's something that I will ever be in a place where I feel like, I can check that off the list. Like, figured out that perfectionism. Good job, me. I don't think that's how it's going to go.
No.
But, you know, it's going to be something that I work towards every day.
Absolutely. And, of course, you bring up burnout, which we have to touch on, because you brought it up and now you're suffering because you have to talk about it.
Yeah.
But let's dive into it. Burnout. Trisha, how do we stay away from burnout?
Oh, man, I'll talk about burnout all day, especially knowing that some of the people who listen to this podcast are people that are aspiring content creators. It is so easy when you love what you do to work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and then wish there were more hours in the day and wish there were more days in the week. Mm-hmm. It is so easy to do that and to fall into that pattern. I find myself doing it all the time. I have people who love me in my life that keep me in check when it comes time for that. And really, again, for me, having a small human who depends on me checked that more than anything else. Mm-hmm. Because if I work too much, then I'm not spending time with him. And in the grand scheme of things, which is more important? Like, when I look back on my life 50 years from now, and think, you know, on on that date in September 2021, was it really important that I balanced my QuickBooks that day? Or was it more important that I spent 2 hours reading a book or playing make-believe with my son? Well, I think we all know which would be the more important looks. Of those two.
Wait, no.
Okay. No! Not the QuickBooks. But, you know, these are the things that, again, constantly working on reframing my mindset so that I can say, take a step back. Now, the opposite side of that is I will say, since I've taken a step back, I have noticed a dip in some of the ways that I measure performance in my career. So when I'm not performing and putting in 120% effort, I'm not getting 120% back. And that's very hard for someone like me who's an overachiever perfectionist to stomach. And I'm still trying to figure that out, to be honest. But I think ultimately it's more important for me to have a happy and healthy work-life balance than it is to be constantly operating at a burnout standpoint. And sometimes you'll burn yourself out so hard that you will physically become ill. And your body will say, I'm not doing this anymore. And then you have no choice but to stop.
Absolutely.
That happens to me every now and then, for sure.
Absolutely. Makes total sense. The audience that I'm cultivating with this show is not only content creators, but also people in general who care about mental health. And, you know, one of the things that we hear so many gurus talking about is preventing burnout by setting realistic expectations on yourself. And that's something that each of us have to struggle with in our own rights. However, I do think it's interesting. You seem to have an answer that I haven't actually heard before, which is, I've realized that I was putting in 120% in work, and now I have Tiny Human, and Tiny Human takes 25%, so I can't hit 120 anymore. I just don't have the math. The math doesn't work. It doesn't check out in my QuickBooks. It doesn't check out on a calculator. You know, I love that you thought about that. Was that a teaching? Was that something you picked up along the way?
It was something that I think I learned the hard way, kicking and screaming. I think as any first-time parent, you are going to be faced with a lot of challenges you probably weren't expecting, no matter how many people tell you, oh, you're going to deal with this, and you're going to deal with this, and it's going to be so hard. You hear all those things, but everyone's journey is really a little different, and everyone faces different challenges. And for me, kind of the biggest headbutting over and over and over again in the first 6 months to a year was trying to figure out how I could still be happy in my work life and be happy in my home life. And at first I thought, I'm going to give up the whole content creator thing and just be a parent. That's what I'm going to do 100% of the time. This is my exit. Goodbye, internet. It's been lovely.
Take care.
I go. Yep, exactly. And I tried to do that. I lasted about 5 weeks. And my hat's so off to stay-at-home parents that are out there, because especially if you're doing it by yourself or you feel like you're doing it by yourself a lot of times, it is so challenging and so difficult because you have decided that this person is more important than you all the time. No breaks, no lunch breaks, no 15-minute breaks, no punching out of the time card. That's it.
Right.
All the time. And it's not like you're done at 8 p.m. No, in 3 hours, you're going to wake back up for more food because you got to feed again. And it's just never ending. And you have to give so much of yourself. And a lot of people, you know, will get a therapist or a counselor to kind of work through that because it's a major life transition. And so for me, I thought, oh, I'm going to 100% do this. And then realized, this is really hard. And I don't know that I can do this just this 100% of the time. So finding the balance for me, and I talk about this with other content creator friends I know that are parents, and finding that struggle. And I think particularly with women, there's like a societal thing about moms, particularly here in the United States, that, you know, when you become a mother, you have to give up everything you cared about now in favor of this. And a lot of people find that mentally very, very hard because you've been this person your entire life. How can you suddenly throw away this entire identity and become a new identity? And really, I don't think you're supposed to. You just need to find what your new normal is and how that works together and makes you happy. And I realize for me that I am a much better parent to my son when I am fulfilled as a person independent of my son. So I had to find what is that balance, right, between how much I can put into my job and still be a great parent and still make him priority number one, because I decided for me he is priority number one. How can I still fit this in so that I'm fulfilled and happy and can be a better parent to my priority number one?
Absolutely.
So that was really what forced me to try to figure out what that should be for me and what the attainable goals should be. And honestly, I'm still struggling with it. You know, I'm still always shooting for one more thing. I should have just done that one more thing instead of looking at what I accomplished for the day. But ultimately now, when it gets to the end of the workday, I am good now with when it gets to the end of the workday, I'm going to call it and go have dinner with my family. And I am done looking at everything until at least his bedtime so that I have that quality time in place. And that's really important to me. And lately, I've also been taking Saturdays completely off. So for anyone who follows me that wonders why I might be like social media dark every Saturday or sometimes the entire weekend, it's because I'm really choosing to reframe my mindset to prioritize other things during that time. But please know that that is hard for me.
Unplugging sometimes from the Matrix?
Trailers drop. Oh, yeah, sometimes trailers drop on a weekend.
Oh, yeah, they do.
You know, and all I want to do is talk about them or see what everyone's saying about them. But, you know, I do think it's important to have those boundaries in place. So I'm working on it.
I mean, it sounds like you definitely have some good reframing beginning. It's, you know, it's so sad to me to not just doing this show, but I, you know, don't have a child. And so I'm kind of on the other side of the fence. And to me, it's always been said that we draw a line between who's the parent and who's not. And there is this kind of weird thing in America where we have like, oh, if you're a parent, you can only hang out with other parents. Or, you know, oh, you're a parent, so you're going to go hang out with parents now. And I'm just going to go hang out with my non-parent friends. When parents actually have some very deep wisdom to teach. And it's kind of funny because I hear like your advice. But your advice applies the same for somebody who has an ailing parent, a sibling who is sick. Mm-hmm. Somebody who needs their attention. Like, there are a lot of scenarios other than just having a tiny life force to take care of where you can apply those same values, those same priorities, and really realize that you have to be able to balance life and not lose yourself in the process.
That is so very true. I mean, we all have our various responsibilities in life. And I think you're right. When people do draw the line between people with children and people who don't have children, I think what they're often saying is people who seem like free spirits that aren't really tied down by any responsibilities and can do whatever they want whenever they want versus people who do have some kind of responsibility, whether it be in their personal life, their professional life, whatever it is, that makes it so that they do have something else that they are beholden to. And a lot of us can relate to that.
Yeah, and sometimes it's us. Sometimes I think we forget that we ourselves are a priority. I mean, it's easy for me because I'm disabled, right? I have certain medical things that I must do every day, and those weigh me down. They stop me from doing this show at 7:30 instead of 6. They stop me from being able to go hang out with my friends instead of doing medical thing. And that is not the same as a kid. I'm in no way making a comparison in that way, but also saying it is a priority I have to make. And I think sometimes people discount themselves as their priority list.
I actually do think it's similar. I think you can make that comparison because I do think that when we have something that we need to prioritize for whatever reason it is, that can sometimes make us feel like we are having a line drawn in the sand between people who are perceived at least to not really have those type of priorities and responsibilities. But what I've found more often than not is even if you perceive that someone else does not have those type of priorities and responsibilities they're beholden to, a lot of times they do. Mm-hmm. You're just not seeing it.
Yeah, imagine that old Robin Williams phrase of fighting battles you know nothing about. It's maybe the greatest quote of all time. Have you found a lot of those in your lifetimes where you find as you get closer to people, you're like, oh, I had no idea you were dealing with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I feel like it's one of the things that brings me so much closer to people, even as I get older, because I hear people say that as you get older, it's harder and harder to make friends. But I have found that when I find people now that I feel some type of kinship with, as soon as I kind of get a peek into if they have any responsibilities or challenges in their life that are similar to mine, for me, I'm like, oh, we have this in common. Let's help each other. This could be great. So I found that it's still pretty easy to make new friends, despite what a lot of people say. And maybe I've just been really fortunate in that.
Maybe luck, maybe not. Do you have tricks and tips on how Trisha makes friends?
I tend to be a very outgoing person, so I'll talk to anyone for better or worse. And it was for worse when I was younger. Don't get me wrong. I was bullied a lot. But I will tend to go into something with a lot of gusto. And sometimes I get told, ma'am, sit down. Ma'am, no, thank you. And that's okay. I'll just direct my energy somewhere else then. But I tend to go out of my way to introduce myself to people. And some people are your people and some people are not your people. But my advice would be, don't waste your time on the not your people. Those people are probably never going to be your people. It's not worth your time and energy to try to win them over. Focus on the people that are your people, that are already willing to put time and energy and care into you. Because life is too short to focus on the not your people.
Absolutely.
And the earlier you can learn that lesson, I think the happier you will be.
It's hard for people pleasers. I know I definitely, you mentioned it earlier, and I definitely identify as someone. You know, when I was 18 years old, I just wanted to become a life where everybody loved me. And it hit me so hard when I was in my late 20s. And I'm like, man, I cannot seem to make everybody love me. I don't know how much harder I can try. And it took me until my early 30s to realize, like, oh, it's not possible. I'm searching for an answer I can't have.
There will be some people who don't like you just because of inherently who you are is like oil and water to them. And that took me a long time to figure out as well. Because I just, you know, you want to be friends with everybody. Yeah. But what I learned, and especially through putting myself out there on the internet, I learned very quickly that there are a lot of people who don't like to see someone else who's happy. They do not like that at all. They don't want to see any of that content of someone else who comes off as happy. Because I guess, I don't know if they feel threatened by it or whatnot, but I learned that very quickly. But I mean, that's part of who I am. I'm a very high energy, optimistic person. It's not something I can shut off. If that's the sticking point for those people, I'm never going to make those people want to hang out or spend time with me apart from completely changing who I am, which no one should ever do, I don't think, to please other people. You should make yourself happy first and foremost, as long as you're not hurting anyone else. Look after yourself. That's really important. But yeah, you know, as soon as you realize, like, there could be someone who doesn't like me because the first time they met me, I had red fingernails, and their evil mother-in-law has red fingernails. And so I don't like that part. Like, you just cannot control it. And that's okay.
Yeah, right?
That's okay. But you will find, the more times you keep putting yourself out there, you will find other people that are the your people. They are the in your camp people.
Yeah.
Then just, yeah, and build those relationships. Focus on those relationships. And everybody else, let them find their own people.
Why do you think we focus on those people who are not the ones that already like us? Why as humans do we have this attraction to going after the person not who likes us, but the person who doesn't like us?
Oh, because it's a challenge.
Yeah.
I think subconsciously, some people maybe consciously, but I think for most of us subconsciously, it's a challenge. It's a, oh, but I think I can win them over. Yeah. And there's a lot of our media that we consume that's all about winning someone over, right? Whether it's winning over the romantic relationship or this person makes, I'm going to sound like a parent right now, but this person makes really poor choices and I'm going to teach them how to make good choices. A lot of our media, even from a very young age, is about winning people over and kind of converting them to the good guy side. But, you know, I think as you get older, you realize there is no moral black and white. There is no good guy side and bad guy side. There's a lot of really complex stuff along that spectrum, all in between. And you can't control other people. The only thing you can control is yourself and your sphere. So the more that you can work within that, I think the better it is for your mental health and everyone's, to be honest.
I don't think I could agree with anything that you said more than that. I remember it wasn't too long ago that someone had made a Jedi comparison to me, and they were like, you really are a Jedi. And I was like, I am. I'm a gray Jedi. And they were like, what do you mean a gray Jedi? I'm like, I don't always fight fair or someone would consider nice. If I see a troll, I'll fight the troll. I will go after the troll, and it's not nice.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
You fight the trolls?
Oh, yeah. I'm happy to fight. I did it today. I'm happy to take a troll. There was a troll who was yelling at my friend and called him a gimmick. And the guy's name was after a villain from a DC comic. And I was like, you literally are a DC throwback to a villain and you're calling someone else a gimmick? Okay. And, you know, I'm just like, all right then. And, you know, I think that being a gray Jedi is the way it is in life. I think we all have our rights and our wrongs, and our moral compasses are sort of our own. Have you found a good way to establish where your North Star is?
Yeah, I just try to respect everybody and do right by everybody else. And you can't, as we're talking about now, you can't really do right by everybody.
Yeah.
But as many people as I can, like if I find that I am engaging in a behavior that hurts somebody else, I'm going to try not to do that behavior. And that's kind of my North Star, is treat everybody else how I would like to be treated ultimately. And, you know, that is not a fail safe, because there are some people who probably don't want to be treated like I want to be treated. So then what I'm even going for is not working. Yeah. But, you know, that's kind of my compass direction that I will point with things and just, you know, try to be as good of a person as my moral compass will allow me to be.
I think that's all we can really do is help ourselves be the best version of what we can. And maybe that's sort of why we are who we are. I mean, personally, I always think about my memories and how those, you know, shaped who I am. Are there a lot of memories that you have where you're like, yes, that was definitely where I decided to be like this or this?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have a lot of memories from early childhood. I was bullied a lot as a kid. Yeah. As I mentioned, I didn't have a lot of friends in general, but I didn't have a lot of friends who shared similar interests to me from a very young age. And I am a hobbit-sized human being. So I was in school, I was about a foot and some change shorter than everybody else my age. So I was always very easy to pick on. Aww. I had really bad allergies. I liked stuff that nobody else was into. And I was really short. So that does not make for a good triumvirate, if you will, of qualities for a kid. So I got picked on a lot. And I think that going through that all through school, really, it made me a person who I work very hard on being inclusive now. I will go out of my way to find the person at work that nobody else wants to invite to happy hour and make sure that they're invited. Huh. It's something that I'm very sensitive to because I have been the person on the outside for so long that I never want someone else to feel that. Now, I think that maybe the negative side of that is as my son gets older and gets in school, if he's facing bullying issues, I might be a little bit overkill in my reaction because I'm so sensitive to that personally. But it definitely shapes how I interact with other people. And especially when I see people that, like you said, if there's people ganging up on them online or something like that, my very protective instincts come out and I will do whatever I can to prevent that person from feeling the way that I know I used to feel when I was younger and really to do things to safeguard myself from ever feeling that way again. So I've reached a place now, I think, with dealing with the trolls, so we like to say, and the people online that are just nasty. I've reached a good place with them now. It was very hard for me at first, but I mean, pretty quickly, I was like, you can't say anything online to me worse than what people said to my face in school.
That's great.
So, like, good try, though. And I choose not to engage the trolls. There's a lot of times I feel like that's exactly what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. I only engage when I do feel like they're coming at me with a fairly well thought out argument. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because then I'm like, all right, there might actually be a conversation to be had here. And then in those cases, I don't consider that really as much of a troll comment as it is someone who's dissatisfied with something. And if we can get to the root of what we have in common, we might actually be able to figure that out. Now, sometimes that's me being way too idealistic. And I go in and I'm trying to find the common ground and they just slap you back down. And then I'm like, all right, this is useless.
You're not worth my energy.
I don't need to be here. But I mean, the way that I safeguarded myself from bullying in real life was to remove myself from that person in that situation. So that's what I tend to do a lot online as well. There are moderation tools in place for a reason. Use them, protect yourself. Do not, like for in Twitch chat, for example, I liken it to if I had a party at my home and I invited guests that I love to my home. If someone came to that party and was being rude to me or one of the other guests in my home, I would kick them out of my house. I wouldn't even think twice about it because I've invited you to a party at my house. And I think of my community as the same way. If someone comes in and is being rude to other members in chat or to me, I'm sorry, you're no longer welcome here.
Uh-huh.
And I used to think online that even unpopular opinions have a space and everybody has a voice and, you know, we have to let everybody say what they want to say. And then I realized that that is complete and utter BS.
Yes.
If someone is being rude to your face in the grocery store, you would remove yourself from that person. Yes, they absolutely have a right to be rude, but maybe not in your house.
Uh-huh.
And that's okay.
Absolutely.
Go be rude in a place that loves people that are rude.
Go over there. Just
have a great time.
Wherever that is.
And actually, Felicia Day said this beautifully on a panel once. She said, if I had the choice between two coffee shops and one coffee shop had the best coffee I'd ever tasted in my life, but all the people that hung out in the coffee shop were constantly throwing food at each other and yelling at each other versus a coffee shop where the coffee maybe, you know, was mediocre, but everyone was so kind there. That's how you have to think about your community. So if you're new and you have to decide which coffee shop to go to, I don't know about you, but I would go to the coffee shop with the mediocre coffee and the really nice people way before the super awesome coffee, but everybody's a jerk.
Uh-huh.
And that's what it is. So you have to think about it as an investment in your business and the type of community that you're growing.
Go That's a good allegory for our own personal lives as well. It's not just the community. So this is something that I've struggled with recently is as I kind of fracture off into being more community-based in Twitch and growing my own following and whatnot. You know, some people don't feel as connected to my point of view. And something I keep trying to reach back to people who don't raise communities is, listen, everybody who's listening to this, whether it's you, Trisha, or me, or someone listening, we're all building friendships. We're all building communities. Maybe it's not online with a following. Maybe it's not on social media or Instagram, but we have to cultivate our space, right? So you can apply that same lesson, is if you don't want someone in your life, and sometimes you can't remove them, they're a parent or someone who's, you know, not being nice to you, but for the most part, friends and stuff like that, you can communicate, you can reach out to them and say, listen, you're just not melding with what I want for my friendships. You're making, you know, jokes at other people's expenses, and I'm not okay with that. You know?
Yeah, not okay.
No, and you have to be able to protect that area, and it goes back to everything you've talked about this entire show about making sure that you have friendships and making sure that you cultivate the ones that you want because they're a reflection of you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There are the your people and the not your people. Spend the time cultivating the your people.
I love the parenting advice that comes out when talking to a parent because it's often so good. I have said this a billion times on the internet. If we would go back and watch those lessons we learned on Saturday morning cartoons and actually absorb them, we probably would all be such nicer people.
That's so true. And actually, the kids' content that's out there right now is pretty good with that stuff. I mean, were our Saturday morning cartoons that good at telling us these, like, big emotional life lessons and we just totally missed it?
I think you forget them as you learn, as you grow older, The world beats you down and you throw out ideals. I know that I can remember some Nick shows that had amazing life lessons, you know. I mean, I think back about Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. That show has amazing life lessons and it's old now. Yeah, they're even thinking about rebooting it, but it's like, that show was great. Like, how do you deal with a parent that's not in your life? How do you deal with a friend that's going the wrong way? How do you stop your friend from doing something that they shouldn't? Like, those were really powerful life lessons, and then we just watched it, laughed, and completely forgot.
Yeah, I guess that's true. And here I am like, oh man, the new, like, kids TV is so good, he's gonna be set. Nope, not unless, I mean, Mr. Rogers was key. Yeah. When we were younger, totally. I watched a lot of Ghostbusters and Ninja Turtles. I'm not sure what the life lessons there were, except for
pizza.
Eat pizza. Lots of pizza. And sometimes Slimer's a good guy.
Come think of it, I don't think I learned any lessons out of Ghostbusters. And I think Greg Miller's going to be really sad when he hears this podcast. Oh, well.
I loved Ghostbusters so much as a kid. I was in love with Egon Spengler. We were going to get married.
It's carried not too late.
Never his. R.I.P. Harold Ramis. But I used to carry around the Egon action figure from the cartoon in my backpack, like kindergarten, first grade, second grade. And he was my boyfriend. And that's okay. I like the smart guys from a very young age, I guess.
You gotta shoot for the stat you like the most, right?
Oh, yes. And I always do. It was Donatello for the Turtles, Egon for the Ghostbusters. Oh, yeah. It was always the smart guys.
Donatello fan. All right. Well, it was nice having you here. This episode will never air.
Wait, who's your favorite turtle?
Not Leonardo. Oh, you were talking
you
about,
like the leader.
Listen, you want to talk about a moral philosophy question? Is this blew my mind. I was talking to a friend and they were like, you know, who's your favorite? And I was like, Leonardo. He's like, great. Who do you think you really are? I was like, probably Raphael. And he's like, I think we're all like that. We all have a turtle we want to be, and we are all a different turtle. And I'm like, oh my God, that's so brilliant. And like, nobody likes that analogy, but I think that's a brilliant analogy.
I think that's a pretty brilliant analogy too.
Yeah, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think I wish that I was a Donatello. I love Donatello. I'm probably maybe more of a Leonardo.
Yeah.
And I say that because in times of crisis, I am always the person that's like, okay, don't panic. Buckle down. Step one, we all do this. Mm-hmm. Step two, we all do this. Like, I will, in times of crisis, I will make decisions and execute a plan and get everybody on board, which I feel like is a pretty Leonardo thing.
It is.
But I mean, do I wish I was just kind of the book smart inventor all the time that was coming up with new cool gadgets? Yeah, of course I do.
I like that.
Of course I do.
I like that. You know, it's funny because it actually ties into what we were talking about earlier about Grey Jedis and fighting trolls is that's actually what led me to that was I idolized the you only fight when you have to. You're very zen. Leonardo is very like he's centered. He is okay with the universe doing its thing and just not interfering if he doesn't have to. And I want to be that turtle. Unfortunately, I am much more of a Raphael. I see someone in trouble and I will grab a weapon and I will go fight. And, yeah, exactly. So yeah, you know,
you run into it heart first. That's a Raphael.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, and it often gets you in trouble, which is also a Raphael.
It definitely can. Yes, it can.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, I have done a lot of these, and I have to say this is one of the first that I've done where I feel like I have a billion more questions, but we're well over our hour at this point. And I'm not even done with you yet. You have 10 more questions to go. So.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I know.
Well, we'll have to do a to be continued part two at some point in the future.
Absolutely. So, Trisha, are you ready for your ramped up Inside the Actors Studio questions? All right, here we go. So these are 10 rapid-fire questions. I will not interject. I will ask you the question. You can answer one word. You can do a sentence. You can do a paragraph. You can do a monologue. It doesn't matter, but I'm not going to respond. And then, after all that, we will know more about the Trisha here before us. Are we ready?
Let's do it.
What's your favorite color?
Purple.
What's your least favorite color?
Yellow.
What's the best?
No, I take that back. Yep. Brown. Yep. Brown is yellow.
Nope, it's yellow forever now. Ah.
It's like poop and pee together, brown, yellow. That's my least favorite color. Right?
Ugh.
Someone tried to sell me a poop brown car once. It was gross.
It's a story I want now. Okay, all right. No, you're distracting me. All right. What's the best thing you've ever tasted?
Ice cream.
What's the worst thing you've ever tasted?
Vomit-flavored jelly bean.
Ew. Have you ever loved someone?
Yes.
Have you ever hurt someone?
Yes.
What can somebody do to earn your trust?
Be a good person. Be nice to other people. Treat everyone with respect.
What's something someone can do to lose your trust?
Be nasty to people that you think are somehow less important than you.
If someone spoke to you the way that you speak to yourself when no one else is around, would you be friends with that person?
I don't know. That's such a hard question. I tend to look at myself in the mirror and get very like, snap out of it, Trisha, you can do this. And I feel like if someone else talked to me like that, I would probably be very off-put at first. Unless it comes from like a tough love place.
Okay. If you died tomorrow, what do you hope people would remember you for?
I hope that people would remember me for being someone who is kind and gracious to those around me and that I was a good parent.
Do you have a personal life philosophy that you would attribute to getting you to where you are today?
Always keep looking skyward. Dream big. Dreams are there to be achieved. Do it.
Trisha, do you believe that some things are better left unsaid?
Yes, absolutely. I believe some things are better left unsaid. Sometimes things pop into our brain that should never be said aloud. I do think that's very true. I believe in being honest when it would benefit someone to be honest. But if saying what popped in your brain benefits nobody, just keep it to yourself.
Trisha, thank you so much for appearing on My Name Is.
Thank you so much for having me. This was delightful.